a lot of people are going to say no, but the constant question needs to be, if not you, then who? If you're not going to help me fund this, or if you're not going to help me do this, then who can I speak to? It was 62 meetings and 38 presentations to high net worth individuals, venture capitalists. Any person that was willing to hear the story got to hear the story. And at my 38th presentation, I got a response, a positive response, which was fabulous.
You're listening to Season 2 of Not Another Business Show with your host, Tracy Sheen.
Welcome to the penultimate episode for Season 2. I'm so excited to share that thanks to everyone listening in who have been sharing the show with your network, we've increased the show's reach in 1 week to over 70 countries. So the fact you are taking the time to share and review the show is making a global difference in the lives of small business owners everywhere. Remember, one more show to go in this season, and we'll take a 2-week break while they put the final prep on what Season 3 looks like. If you have any suggestions for guests, or you know anyone who adds a bucket load of value to small business owners and you think I should talk to them, then please connect with me on social media or drop me an email. Today, though, the focus is on raising capital for your business. At the top of the show, we heard from Tamar Krebs. Remember her from episode 17? She's showing Australia a different way to treat dementia through her business, Group Homes Australia, and talking about the tenacity that it can take to find a suitable investment for your project. Just like J.K. Rowling was turned down somewhere between 9 and 12 times, Tamar took 62 meetings and 38 presentations before securing investment for her concept. So apart from her, if not you, then who mentality, how do you stay focused when all around you seems to be fobbing your idea off?
The big thing is, for me, was one, believing that people deserve a different option. So the passion and the drive and the motivation is constantly brought back to me by the sense that people deserve better. And this was not going to be necessarily about me, but it was going to be about providing a new service into the Australian aged care industry. So there's a big vision there. It was really about crystallizing what it is that I wanted from this person. Did I want their advice? Did I want their money? Did I want their advice and their money? Did I want them just to connect me to other high net worth individuals? Did I want them to be hands-on and help me actually build the business? And at the beginning, if you ask me at the first meeting that I went to, I had no clue. And the best story is I went in to pitch to these very high net worth individuals who had a venture capitalist firm. And the guy turned around to me and said to me, "So how does this make money?" And I was like, "Oh, dear, I should have thought of that about that, shouldn't I?" And I had all the spreadsheets, and it's a basic question. I started fumbling because I said, "So if you did," I couldn't give him a one sentence answer, which by the 62nd meeting, in a second, I could, you know, say, this is where your revenue comes from, this is your return on investment, et cetera, et cetera. So crystallizing the story was a really big part of that journey, which I think people have to go through. And you do have those days where you put your head in your hands thinking, is this really a good idea? But you have the support around you, and you make sure that you have people that are your cheering squad. You call them on those days and say, am I doing this? And then they tell you the stories about the bridge climber that got 150 no's. And they tell you about, you know, Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, and everybody has a story.
Crystallizing your story. Knowing exactly what you want from the person you are talking to, getting your pitch absolutely solid, and having clear and succinct answers to every question you hope someone doesn't ask you. We're only a few minutes in, and already you have brilliant advice to put into play if you're looking at how to seek investment. For those of you listening who are about to embark upon the journey of seeking investment for your business, Tamar wanted to share this.
be clear what you want. I mean, that was a big thing about clarity of what are you asking for. Be brave. So being brave, it's not about not feeling the fear, but it's overcoming the fear and that courage to stand up and say, this is what I believe in, this is what I want to do. Have your eye on that goal and just keep working step by step. And every meeting is a valuable meeting if you can walk away saying, what did I learn from that? Even if it was a negative meeting.
Being clear and being brave. The clarity I understood immediately, but it took me a few more interviews with venture capital specialists and investors and other business owners who have sought funding to really understand what Tamar meant by that statement. Let's take a step back for a moment and put some definitions around the different types of finance that are available to businesses. To get clear on what these are, I went to a friend of mine who does this for a living. Ali Muller is co-founder of Big Wave Ventures, and seriously, the smartest person I have in my circle when it comes to understanding the world of investment. So whenever we look at a new topic, it always makes sense to get a definition of what we're talking about, just to make sure that we're all on the same page. So I sat down with Ali to get my head around all of this stuff, and I started by asking, what is venture capital?
So venture capital is basically the opportunity for outside investors to come into a startup business to help them get off the ground. And generally, this comes in the form of two types. So the two types that we generally work with are seed capital. And what that is generally a business is not quite off the ground yet. They may not have any cash flow at that point, but they may have an excellent concept, an understanding of the market, or an innovative product with a patent, or a software tech platform. And what they need is the capital to get that off the ground. And what happens is with venture capital is you exchange the capital for equity in the business. And this is often a high-risk investment. And this is something that the venture capitalists are looking to see return on generally anywhere between 3 and 6 years, depending on the type of business. The second form that's out there that we work with is something called Series A capital. And this happens after seed capital. And what happens is this is actually when the business is running. So they are generally a going concern at this point. They have revenue coming in. They may not be turning very high profits. But what they are going to do at this point in time is get capital in return for preferred stock options. And what that does is that gives them enough capital to actually hit a growth trajectory and make a big impact in the market.
The first thing I learned in chatting with Ali is there are various types and stages of investment. And before anyone gets to looking for venture capital or even seed capital, they generally go through what is called foundation capital.
What the stage is before seed is what we call foundation capital. And really, that's when you should almost be beg, borrowing and stealing from your family, from your bank account. You're probably still working, so you might be using your income that you're currently receiving to build your product. And this is the point that you probably are still sitting in the garage or in your home office or with a team of people putting something together. And generally, as a rule of thumb only, this is generally under $2 million. So seed capital is usually over $2 million and Series A quite often is over $10 million.
Now, the way I got this clear in my head was to think about some of our past guests, like Maria Pamela from last week's episode, who took $15,000 of her own cash to kick herself off. Or Ben Newsom from episode 17, who borrowed $5,000 from his father-in-law while still working a full-time job to start physics education. Both of those business owners, using Ali's definitions, raised foundation capital. Like a lot of business owners, myself included, they tapped whatever source they could close to them to get their ideas off the ground. So I get that. But that got me thinking about the next step. How do you actually know when you need to raise capital for your business?
Generally, they're at the point where they understand that they've taken it as far as they can, but they've built their business model and they understand that they need a significant injection of money to take them to the next level. So this is not something that is just about a bit of sweat equity. If they put a bit more time in, that they could actually get off the ground. This is actually building a business model to understand that if they had this particular amount of money, they would be able to launch or put the exact type of research and development together to take their product from the garage, so to speak, into the market.
Okay, now we're starting to talk about the kind of businesses we see appearing on Shark Tank. They have typically been operating for a while, have some runs on the board in terms of having a proven concept, they have sales in the pipeline, and now looking to level up. When it comes to that time, I wondered how most people know where to start. Are the majority of business owners like Tamar and jump in feet first, learning on the fly? Or are they schooled up on what to expect and how to position themselves? Ali explained to me there are a couple of ways she sees business owners going about the process. And while you may have guessed that some people choose to go it alone trying to navigate this brave new world, others work with someone like Ali who helps them get investment ready.
There's a couple of ways to do it. So one of the things that we recommend is they can come and talk to people like us, but bearing in mind that we only generally look at businesses seeking capital over $2 million, or they can just work in some investment networks and they can actually look to see what's happening themselves. But one of the most important things that they need to think about, and this is something that we do help businesses with, is understanding that their business is actually structured correctly to receive the capital. So there's a lot of small businesses out there that believe that they will need a series of capital to basically come in and fund their business. But really what they're looking for are wages. So that's actually not something that a venture capitalist would put money into. What they're looking to put money into is a business that they can put on a significant growth trajectory. So they're okay if you're continuing to not earn a wage for a small period of time, as long as you're willing to put the time in. So from a small business perspective, they need to understand that they have a business that can actually transform themselves into a larger market. They have a very hungry audience, so that there is a large number of people that really should be accessing that product, but they probably just need to find out about it. And that they have understood and built a growth model that is sustainable over time. And when they understand that, that's when they can consider looking at capital to fund their business.
It's interesting that Ali talked about being structured to actually gain investment, as I would almost bet that the majority of businesses thinking about raising investment hadn't even considered looking at their own structure prior to beginning their pitch. At this point, I wanted to turn to Matthew Paulson, our serial entrepreneur from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. We met Matthew back in season one and have also chatted to him a couple of times in season two. In between being a serial entrepreneur, Matthew is also an angel investor in small business. From an investor's point of view, I wanted to know what Matthew looks for when he is approached by a business seeking investment.
Honestly, it kind of depends on the day. You know, people invest in things for a lot of different reasons. Generally, most of my investments, I'm looking for income. If you look at my investment portfolio, there's two very different sides of one coin. On one side, there's some very risky stuff that I don't really know or care if I'm going to get my money back all that much on. You know, I hope I do, but it's not a guarantee, and I'm not betting my retirement on it. But then on the other side, there is, you know, a more traditional mix of stocks and bonds where there's an idea called modern portfolio theory that suggests how to get a maximum rate of return for the amount of risk that you're willing to take. On that side, where most of my money is, it's just having efficient investments where there are low fees, they're going to throw off dividends and just appreciate over time. You know, most of my investments aren't particularly fancy. It's 70% stocks, 30% bonds, a mix of US and international. And there's not a lot that's fancy to it, but it works over the long term. The math and the numbers and the history kind of pan that out.
What I figured out really quickly chatting with Matthew is that every investor has a unique take on what they are looking for in an opportunity. When I got that, I understood why it could take someone like Tamar 62 meetings before finding an investor who was interested in her vision. It also left me needing to define one last form of investment, and it's one that Matthew classifies himself as, an angel investor.
So an angel investor is somebody that has extra money, you know, laying around, usually a lot of it, and they want to invest in a small company, hoping that down the line that company will get sold, or it'll go public and you'll get a outsized return on it. So when you invest in a publicly traded company, you know that you're going to get between, you know, maybe 7% and 10% annualized return on your money. A portfolio of angel investment companies, you're hoping to get something a lot higher because you're taking on more risk. So you get an opportunity to get in on a company earlier on. There's a lot more risk on it. And sometimes you do it just because, hey, you've got extra money and you want to place a bet on a company. I don't want to say it's like buying a lottery ticket, but in a way it kind of is, because it's, you get maybe 1% of a company, and if it, you know, they sell, eventually it's going to be a pretty good return for you. When if they, you know, just kind of fizzle like most startups do, then you're not going to get anything back. So you might invest in 10 companies, 7 of them might fail, 2 of them, you know, you might make your money back or double your money, and then you're hoping that one of them will just have like a 10 or 20x return back on your money.
So the big difference between angel investors and VC then is?
So typically angel investors are kind of smaller dollar amounts than VCs. You know, venture capital, you know, that typically happens at a firm where there's, you know, several partners, and then they raise money and then they take that money and invest it in kind of later stage startups. Angel investing is more earlier stage where, hey, I've got an idea, I need 100 grand to get started. And then, you know, you might get 4 or 5 people to invest 20, 25 grand. And that's kind of an angel round. But, you know, once you get several million dollar range, that's kind of in the VC space.
In chatting with Ali, she offered this definition along with the pros and cons of angel investment.
The angel investor network is something that's been set up. So people who are generally high net worth, and what they do is they've set up a number of networks around the world. So there's obviously a strong angel investment network in each major city around the world. And what they do is they allow businesses to come into and pitch to them over periods of time, and individuals can provide sums of money into that business. The difference with that is sometimes you might get a singular investor, or sometimes a number of investors might come together and you might have multiple investors into your business if people only want to put in pieces of that. So there's a good side and a bad side to that. Sometimes it's great if you can manage to get the money that is required, and it might come from multiple investors. The bad side to that is what that does is it increases the workload and the governance structures that you need to manage within your business, and it just increases the workload from a reporting perspective. So something that a business would need to understand from a governance perspective, and they'd need to understand how to manage that, and they'd need to manage the expectations of multiple investors instead of one. So it's got its ups and it's got its downs.
Just like anything, you have to weigh up your pros and cons of what type of investment you think is going to be right in the moment. As the conversation went on between Matthew and I began to realize that for him at least, his angel investments are more about a desire to support and assist small businesses. Because as Matthew put it, in most instances, angel investors could get a better return on the stock market. It's also, as Matthew says, like adding a little sizzle to your steak.
I don't know if, you know, being an average angel investor, you're going to do better than the stock market. You're probably going to do worse in a lot of cases. So it's not so much about getting your money back all the time as it is kind of supporting ideas that you think are cool, or, you know, ideas you're passionate about. Hopefully you'll get your money back, but it's not always a guarantee. Like what I do is, you know, 95% of my money goes into stocks and bonds, and maybe 5% of it will go into kind of more risky things like angel investments, where there might be a friend of mine raising money and I might want to throw some money at it, or just a company I think is interesting and I'll put some money at it, or, hey, this guy was a successful founder at this other company and, you know, I think he could do it again, so maybe I'll throw some money at that. So it's a pretty small part of my portfolio. You know, you can do it for a lot of different reasons, but it's just kind of have, it's almost like adding just some sizzle to your steak to make your investments a little bit more exciting.
Chatting with Matthew is really interesting, as so far in my own business journey, I've not needed to look at raising external finance. But to get an inside peek into the mindset of an angel investor, well, I found that fascinating. Also, having access to Ali was like understanding two sides of the one coin. There is a lot that goes into creating a pitch and actually securing investment. But given that Matthew says that each investor is basically looking for something different in business, I asked Ali how a business would know what kind of investor they should be looking for. Turns out that question is not as easily answered as I thought and hoped it would be.
That's a really hard question, because one of the things that's really important is actually matching the right investor to the business. So there is not one right answer, and there's not one equation that will come together and make this right. So that each business needs to look at this individually. So there are a lot of startups out there that actually need an investor that can provide a little bit more than cash. Some investors like to come in and they like to provide mentoring, support, and guidance through advisory boards, and they actually can bring their experience in that particular industry and help the startup. And that's great, particularly for younger entrepreneurs who may not have as much experience or possibly need a few grey hairs to come to some business meetings and provide a bit of clout in the business meeting. But then there are other entrepreneurs that may not need that. They may know their industry exceptionally well. They may understand the market and the customer, and they may not be looking for that type of experience, and they just need the money. So they need to understand that they should be pitching their business to an investor that is likely to be a silent investor and is just looking for the return over time. And that's one of the crucial steps in understanding investment. It's not about pitching your business to anyone and everyone. It's actually about understanding your business, knowing who you think would be the best investor, doing your research so that you can actually look at how they like to invest and the types of businesses that they like to invest in, what type of experience they have if you want them to bring experience to the table, and then building your pitch around that so that it becomes an attractive investment to that investor.
I had to think of this like Shark Tank. And yes, my life is pretty much either song lyrics or TV show or movie references. Now, when someone is pitching on Shark Tank and they're offering equity in the business in return for dollars, what the sharks usually come back with is additional mentoring or guidance or business management. They will offer to introduce the owner to people or help bring systems and processes to a business to see them through the next stage of growth. It's rare I see a pitch where the sharks are simply trading money for equity. But I wanted to get Matthew's take on matching an investor to a business.
It kind of depends. Like if you were to go on AngelList, which is kind of a major website that angel deals happen on, typically a lot of times it's just the money. If you're more involved, it could be money plus relationships. So if I, you know, invested in a company and I knew I could hook them up with like three or four people that would help them grow their business, that might be good. Or it might be money plus a skill set. So it can be, you know, money and skills, money and relationships. If you are a very big angel investor, you might get a board seat. If you own like say 10, 20% of the company, you might be in their board of directors and will have, you know, a say in how the company is operated.
Now, remember, we are talking very different dollar amounts in terms of investment between what an angel investor brings to the table and what venture capital does. So once you have a concept of what you're actually looking for in terms of investment, Ali has some very wise words to offer around how to prepare yourself to face the investors.
Depends on what they're looking to achieve. There's a couple of things that are stand out for all businesses. One of them is they really need to know their numbers. So they need to understand their current financial position, and they need to have built a set of forecasts that are realistic, not too conservative, but definitely don't exaggerate them, in line with possible market trends so that they can understand the growth trajectory of where this business could actually go. One of the other things they need to think about is, from a governance perspective, how are they structured? So they need to be operationally ready to receive the money. So this can't just be a bunch of people sitting around with a great idea, hoping to get a couple of million in to do some research and development. They have to have a very structured plan. They have to be focused on where they want to go. They have to outline a number of milestones that they plan to achieve over a set period of time, so the investor will know that at each and every point in time when they ask for some feedback, how they are tracking against these milestones. The other reason why milestones are very important, because there's always an opportunity for an investor to provide milestone funding over time. So rather than giving a big cash amount up front, they might choose to drip that into the company over the next 2 to 3 years, provided that that business meets those milestones that have been laid out. And what that does is it keeps them honest, it keeps them on their plan, and it keeps them targeted and focused. The other thing they really need to understand when they're structuring for investment is what their team looks like. One of the most important things that an investor is actually buying into is the team to manage the business. They don't want to know that they're just investing into an idea or a product. What they need to understand is that the people that are running this business have the drive, the passion, and basically the desire to see this successful. So they may not always have the experience, because entrepreneurs can come in many different shapes and sizes and age groups, but it's about the desire and the passion to be successful. And that's a very important thing. And that's one of the key things you should always sell to an investor.
And that brings the conversation back to understanding the structure a business will need before it seeks investment. I see that potentially this could be confronting for a lot of business owners when they realize that while the business is their baby, they may not be the best person to take the company through the next growth phase. So maybe they need to find and appoint a CEO or maybe an ops manager. The point is, though, whenever a business is getting ready to seek investment, you need to remove the emotion from the business and look at it as objectively as possible. As a very successful owner said to me, owning 5% of a multi-million dollar company is far better than owning 100% of a stalled business. So let's assume you understand your numbers. You've taken a good look at your structure and you understand what type of investment your business needs. How do you go about pitching for investment? I mean, we've done an episode on pitching. Is it the same as using your elevator pitch? Or are investors looking for something different?
There's a bit of a difference. You know, when we're pitching for investing, we almost want to read their mind and we want to basically preempt some of the questions they're going to ask. So we know that they're going to basically ask the first question of, am I going to lose my money if I invest in your business? So what they're looking for is, what's the degree of proof that you've worked up for your business? So how do they know that you've looked at this, that you've researched it, and you've understood the audience that's going to be taking up the business that you're putting out there? They want to know, does it feed a hungry crowd? Do you have a really large audience out there, or are you a very small niche market that may not have a strong growth trajectory? They also want to understand, do you have a sales pipeline developed? Do you have any purchase orders or any current clients that they can actually look to say, well, they're starting to generate some cash flow? And what are the contracts or potential partners that you have lined up to help build this business? The second question that they're really going to look at is, they want to know, when are they likely to get their money back? And what they really mean by this is, do you understand or have a clearly defined exit strategy? Now, that doesn't mean that you have to put that exit strategy into play when it happens. But what they want to know is that you understand, when would be the right time to potentially exit the business and what you're doing to work towards that. They also want to look to see if you've understood what are the companies that are out there that might look to consider to buy your business in the future if it gets to a really large growth trajectory. And why would they consider buying your business? Because that could be an excellent growth strategy. And the third question, which some people would think would be the first question, is, are they actually going to make any money? So what are the milestones that you've put in place that you're putting together in your strategic plan so that you know exactly what you're working to over time and you're going to stick with the plan? They also want to know what you've achieved to date before you've had any investment. And that's a really crucial piece. Like, what have you done on your own? What your sweat equity is that you've been putting in over time to build this up? And what have you actually achieved before you're asking them for any money? And then they want to know what your growth plan is. And it has to be realistic. But at the same time, there's a fine line. It can't be too conservative. They want to know that they're actually getting into a business that is possibly going to make them some money. What you also need to show them, that you're operationally ready to take this money on, that you have a plan for how the money is going to be used as soon as the money hits the accounts, how the money is going to be dispersed, and how is it going to be spent over time. So it's not just thought that it's just going to sit there and hopefully get them to where they need to be.
That was a lot to take in there. But Ali pretty much just served up on a plate everything you need to create an awesome pitch that is investor ready. From thoroughly researching the opportunity from every angle, to understanding who could potentially look to acquire your business down the track, to your milestones and how you're looking to utilize the money. So then I asked Matthew a similar question. From an investor's point of view, what is he looking for when someone's pitching him?
It's almost more like what you're not looking for, or like what you're hoping that they don't do. There are kind of a lot of red flags that a startup can show early off. And if you see one of those red flags, then you know that you should probably stay away. Then I also look for who are the people running the business. Because usually when you start a new business, the business model that you start with isn't the one that you end up with. So typically you want to bet on the people or not necessarily on the specific business model. So you look for founders that have, you know, a track record and what have they done before and who are they? What are their experience? Or do these people have a pretty good shot of making it? And even if their current business model doesn't work out, maybe they'll pivot and do something that will work out.
Red flags and things they hope people don't do in pitches. When I pressed him a little harder, he started to liken the process back to Shark Tank and shared all the same gold that Ali gave a few moments ago.
It's almost like if you've seen the TV show Shark Tank, it's a lot of the mistakes that people on no-shows make. Those are the same kind of mistakes that people make in pitches. So, you know, they don't know their numbers. They don't really understand their industry. They just don't understand how their business model could work. Or it's just not big enough to be investable. Or they're just, you know, full of crap. You don't invest. But when you see somebody that has their stuff together, understand how their industry works, they know how they're going to make money, they know what they have to do, they understand, you know, how much money they have to raise, they understand what they're going to do with the money once they raise it, usually pretty easy to sniff some of that stuff out.
One of the jargon terms I came across a lot when I was chatting with both Ali and Matthew was a pitch deck.
A pitch deck is a PowerPoint presentation that you put together to pitch your business to an investor. So what it is basically a series of what makes you a great business. So basically tell them why you're a wonderful business and why they should invest in you. Tell them why you're different and what you're doing. Tell them why you're looking at that market that you're in and why it's going to be such a growth market for the future. And one of the most important things that you should always tell your investor is why you are such an amazing team. And one of the things that we see go wrong in pitches many times is quite often there's a designated CEO to a company, because most companies have been put together with more than one person, and it's just that person that goes in for the pitch. Now, that's a really bad thing because the investor wants to understand all of the people in that business. So we always recommend the whole team goes and pitch and the whole team has something to say. Now that gives the investor the opportunity to ask them questions and just see what that team's really like and understand their passion and see what they're really investing in.
So basically, the pitch deck is the supporting documentation, usually a PowerPoint presentation, as Ali said, that allows you to capture all of the important details around your business. What you put in your pitch deck and how you use it, though, should never take the place of actually having your pitch down without the need for props. I've heard a lot of stories of businesses that have missed opportunities because they put all of their time into developing a schmick-looking pitch deck without having memorized any of the real detail. Like the rest of business, you need to be ready at the drop of a hat to give a potential investor what they need to get you to the next meeting. So as Tamar said at the start of the show, if you have an elevator ride of 5 floors and there's no time to get into a full-blown presentation, how are you going to pitch the investor to get them interested enough to invite you for a next meeting? I asked Ali, apart from being reliant on props, what are some of the other mistakes she sees business owners making when it comes to pitching for investment?
So small businesses, they'll put together a pitch deck and it'll almost be like War and Peace. They'll make these amazing slides. It'll be overinflated. It'll be 100 pages. It'll probably take them at least an hour in a presentation to get through them. And it's complex and it's very difficult to understand. So we always ask small businesses to pare it all the way back. Keep it really simple. Just tell them what they need to know. Let's not overcomplicate it. And what that does, one of the most important things, is it actually leaves room for the investor to have a discussion, because they're going to have some questions and it's a good opportunity to see how they engage with the business owner. You haven't overdone it with the information. One of the really big mistakes they also make is what we call shopping the deal to everybody and anyone that will listen to them. Now, that just isn't a great idea for a number of reasons. One is it actually makes you look really desperate, and that's not a great position to be in. No one wants to look like they're desperate in that situation. The other thing is a lot of investors want to have a little bit of exclusivity over some of these deals. So they want to know that it hasn't been offered up to too many people, and they might have an exclusive negotiation session with you. And the third thing in that space is find the right investor for your business. It's not about finding any investor. One of the most crucial things we see is you need to find an investor that matches your business and understands where you want to go. And then another really big mistake is don't exaggerate your financials or your growth trajectory. Always make it realistic. Now, it's a really fine line between exaggerating the figures and making it too conservative, but you need to find that balance. If it's too conservative, the investor might think that it's not worthy enough of the investment, or that you haven't put enough thought and effort into the research of what your customer actually looks like. If you exaggerate it, basically you're losing credibility in the pitch and the investor is not going to believe you, and it's never going to work. And then one of the big things that people make a mistake on, and it's not so much when they ask the investor, but it's something they do when they put their plans together, is they ask for too little money. So they only ask for the bare minimum that they think they need to get by. And what we find is sometimes it's not enough. So being business owners, we all know that costs can blow out, timeframes can blow out from time to time, and what we actually need is more money to get through. So if you can ask for a little bit more than what you actually need to give yourself a buffer, you're less likely to have to go back with your hand out.
You can see how easy it would be to make some rookie mistakes when looking for investment based on what Ali shared. As Matthew said to me when I asked him about people approaching him who had no cash but a solid business idea.
I don't care about dollars so much as I do execution. So if someone comes to me and says, hey, I have this great business idea, it's like, okay, what have you done so far? And they say nothing. It's like, well, you know, an idea isn't worth anything until it's been executed on. But if they, you know, come with kind of a working model or demonstration or, you know, anything to show that, you know, they're actually already moving on their project and just aren't waiting to have somebody write them a check, it's usually a pretty good sign.
Hopefully you found a lot of gold in how you set your pitch up and can see now some of the rookie mistakes you can avoid while you're preparing your business for investment. So let's look at what the process looks like once you actually receive an investment offer.
So somebody may want to put some money into your business. The next stage from there is actually, they will actually want to go back and do some due diligence over your business. So this is stepping back into why business structuring is so critical. So they won't just invest blindly. You will need to open up your business to that investor for them to look at your books, your ideas, your balance sheet, everything to do with your business, and for them to be able to do some rigorous due diligence over it so they can assess whether the risk actually stacks up for them and whether it's worth it. So the process after due diligence, if that's successful, is you'll go to a term sheet. And what that means is either party, possibly the VC to the business, will actually provide you with a set of terms, legal terms, to go into an agreement so that you can decide what the structure of that agreement is going to look like. And now that's the point when you can start negotiating on what they'll get for their money and what these terms are going to look like. And once the term sheet is agreed, you can then go to a full legal agreement, make sure that's signed off by everybody, and then the funds can be dispersed.
Once the money hits the bank account, how long, typically, before the investor or investors are looking for a return on their investment?
You know, again, it depends on the type of investment. With angel investing, you're not going to see your money back for probably 5 or 10 years. So it's, you really have to recognize that going in, this is a long-term investment. You know, it's a bet on a company. If the company succeeds, you're going to get your money back 5 to 7 to 8 years later. I think 5 to 7 years is what most angel investors kind of target.
Okay, so that's angel investors. But when it comes to talking about venture capital, we may be talking about equity in your business as well. So I'll let Ali explain that one.
So one of the things that a lot of venture capitalists will want to see is they provided capital into the business in return for an equity stake. Now, the reality is that's a fantastic thing. Giving up part of your company is never bad if you can ask somebody to bring some money in. And what they become is emotionally attached to your business, and they are basically driving for success as much as you are. Basically, quite often though, that equity stake may not be for life. What they might often want to do is see a return on that anywhere between 3 and 5 years. So what that means is you can have the opportunity to buy that equity piece back, or they may want to hold on to it over time. So that's one opportunity. The other one is a pure loan perspective. So an equity style loan, so they might take a piece with a guaranteed buyback over a period of time. So it acts very much like a loan, whereas there's a predefined return rate at the beginning, and you'll be looking to provide that over the next 3 to 5 years, usually around 5 years.
I know I mentioned earlier that owning 5% of a multi-million dollar company is better than owning 100% of a stalled business, but Ali deals with helping business owners get their heads around this concept every day. So I asked her how she explains trading equity for dollars to her clients.
What they should be doing at this point in time is still managing to hold enough equity so that they do have managing share of the business anyway. So the venture capital is unlikely to want to hold more than probably 40% of the business because it's probably not sitting right in from that risk-reward ratio for them. So they still have major control of the business, but what they're getting in return is the money and the capital and sometimes the expertise in that industry to take them to the next level. And there will always be an opportunity in the future to buy back that equity stake. And the reason why we say it's not something that they should shy away from is because in many instances, this can be the difference between growth and no growth.
We've covered a lot of ground today on the topic of investment, and there are still things we didn't get to touch on and others that we probably didn't deep dive enough into. Hopefully, though, hearing from all of our guests, you have a much better understanding of what the overall process looks like and the steps you need to consider if finding investment is something in your business future. That brings us to the end of the penultimate episode for the season. A big thanks to my guests today, Tamar Krebs from Group Homes Australia, Ali Muller from Big Wave Ventures, and Matthew Paulson, serial entrepreneur and angel investor. As always, though, my biggest thanks goes to you for listening in. Thank you to those people who dropped me an email about potentially sponsoring next season of Not Another Business Show. If you're considering whether your business would be a good fit to sponsor the show, why not drop me an email at tracy@corporatepodcastproduction.com.au and we can have a chat. I'll link out to my email in the show notes. Also, the article Lessons from the Masters in Investing will be available for your reading pleasure at the end of the week via LinkedIn Pulse or on the Not Another Business Show Facebook page. Until next week, I'm leaving you with a quote from Eric Ries, Silicon Valley entrepreneur and author of The Lean Startup. Don't be in a rush to get big. Be in a rush to have a great product.
Not Another Business Show is edited and produced by Corporate Podcast Productions. Let your story be heard.